Shalom, welcome to ASJTF. This is Chaim Ben Pesach. This program is dedicated to elevating the souls of Simcha Bat Shlomo, Pesach Ben Dov, Meir Ben Yecheskel, and Yosef Ben Meir. Before we get to our many questions from our great JTFers this week, there are actually a lot of things I want to speak about. I'm going to try to limit it as much as possible, but there are a lot of topics that I would like to address this week. The first one is some good news that I just heard tonight. Hillary Clinton, who is the overwhelming favorite to win the Democrat presidential nomination in 2016, according to the polls, she gets 75% of the vote among Democrats. So she's the overwhelming favorite to be the Democrat nominee in 2016. And the same polls show that she would be a heavy favorite against any possible Republican challenger. So she is the favorite to become the next president of the United States, God forbid, and she is a despicable, left-wing, vicious Jew hater, Israel hater, a traitor to the United States. She is a complete nightmare, just as Barack Hussein Obama's a nightmare. So it would be a continuation of the Obama nightmare if, God forbid, she ever got elected. I just heard that she was admitted to the hospital with a blood clot. So let's hope that she has serious health problems. Let's hope that this interferes with any possible presidential run. We don't know. It's early. Who knows? But thank God, at least maybe this gives us a glimmer of hope that she's going to have serious health problems. And maybe her health problems, I don't know, but maybe her health problems might save us from a Clinton presidency, God forbid. So it's just a little glimmer of possible good news that I heard. So God willing, let's pray that her health problems should be as serious as possible. She's a very evil person. She's responsible for the murder of many innocent people in Israel and around the world. And it would be a catastrophe for her to become president of the United States. So let's hope, God willing, that these health problems are more serious and become more serious and prevent her from ever becoming president. Baruch Hashem, thank God that we have this glimmer of hope, at least. And of course, we have the fiscal cliff that's quickly approaching. It certainly looks like the United States is going to go over the fiscal cliff, and the deadline is not going to be met. That's the way it looks right now, anyway, at the time that we're doing this program. I have no doubt that they're eventually going to work out some sort of agreement, because the massive tax increases on middle-class voters, that would be something that would be so politically unpopular that Democrats and Republicans are not going to allow that to stand. So they're going to work something out. The only problem is what they're going to work out is going to be bad in the end, because they're giving in to Barack Hussein Obama's ultimatums and to the ultimatums of the news media. The Republican establishment always caves in. And so, you know, we see a continuation of the tragic consequences of Obama's reelection. Those tragic consequences will mean not only that Obamacare will be imposed upon the American people, but also that we're going to have higher taxes, higher fees, more bureaucracy, bigger government. It's going to be a real nightmare. And as I've said in prior programs, since the disastrous election, there's only one chance that America still has. There's one slight chance America still has to survive all of this. Just one chance, because right now America is headed off not just the fiscal cliff, America is headed toward self-destruction. But the only chance that America still has, the only shot America still has, is that when Obama's policies fail, and they will certainly fail disastrously, but when Obama's policies fail, there will be a backlash from the American people, and the American people will turn against left-wing policies in a backlash against the disastrous Obama program. That's the only shot we have. If the American people wake up because of that, and if the majority of the American people turn against that and turn against the left and turn against the Democrats and really want to usher in a new era of conservative government, that is the last hope that America has to survive, that would happen. There are instances in history where people don't wake up despite very bad situations. With Franklin Delano Roosevelt, he was elected in 1932, and he made the Depression worse with his government intervention and government policies, but he convinced the American people that he was making things better, because he had fireside chats and he was very charismatic and he was a very dynamic speaker. And he had the main news media, not the newspapers in those days. The newspapers in those days were Republican. But he had the main, the broadcast media, the radio, which was the big, which was the television and the internet of those days. He had the radio media, CBS and other radio stations. They were on his side. And so he was able to convince most Americans that he was really very helpful and that he was doing great things for the American people, even though he was prolonging and worsening and deepening the Depression. And his policies, of course, are disastrous policies that have led to terrible consequences to this day. But Roosevelt was able to get reelected overwhelmingly in 1936 and again in 1940 and again in 1944. He was elected four times to the presidency. This is before we had the constitutional amendment barring the election of presidents for only two terms. The reason there is a constitutional amendment preventing presidents from being elected for more than eight years or for more than two terms, the reason we have that constitutional amendment was in response. A Republican Congress passed that, and this was in response to Roosevelt, because people didn't want another Roosevelt who could run four times in a row and get elected and reelected four times. But anyway, Roosevelt was elected and reelected despite his disastrous policies. And so that just proves that even if Obama's policies fail, and they have failed and they've been failing, you saw in the past election that still there are people who will insist upon believing that the bad things that are happening are really good and will continue to sugarcoat the bad news. So it's possible that there won't be a backlash. It's possible the majority of Americans, that most Americans, will accept what Obama's doing and think that it's wonderful. That's possible. That's what happened with Roosevelt. That's what's happened in other times in history. That's possible. The news media certainly will try to achieve that, will try to accomplish that for Obama and for the left. However, there are other instances in history where people do wake up, like in 1980, the media and Jimmy Carter and the Democrats tried to convince everybody that double-digit inflation and double-digit interest rates and massive unemployment and all the other disasters that Jimmy Carter had brought to the American people, had brought upon the American people, that this was really good, that there was really good news here. They tried to convince Americans of that in 1980, but because Ronald Reagan woke the American people up, Americans overwhelmingly rejected Carter and elected Reagan. There was a backlash, and new policies were instituted in the 1980s that resuscitated and revived America and brought America back, at least temporarily. So, will we have a situation like we had with Roosevelt, or will we have a situation like we had with Jimmy Carter? Who knows? Who knows? Obama's policies have failed and will continue to fail and will bring disaster upon America. Will the American people recognize the disaster? Will the American people demand an alternative? Will an alternative emerge? Those are issues that only the future will tell, but that's the last hope for the salvation of America. And the fiscal cliff and this whole disaster that we see, this is just a continuation of this farce playing out between the Democrat and Republican establishment, and it's just, in the end, the result is going to be more taxes, expanded government, more bureaucracy, which, of course, is terrible for the future of America. But as we say, all hope is not yet lost. If there's a backlash, you know, there is still that chance, that outside chance, that people will still wake up. And, of course, JTF will try to wake people up. And finally, I want to speak about Israel before we get to our questions. We have an election coming up on January 22nd. Leminyanam. Leminyanam means according to their count. It's not according to the Jewish calendar. The year 2013, January 22nd, 2013 is the calendar that people use, but it's not the Jewish calendar. So I say Leminyanam. On this election on January 22nd, we're going to have a new government and Knesset elected, but it's really going to be the same basic people all over again. It's a rehash of the same people all over again. All the parties are bad. All the politicians running are bad. I mean, that's just a fact of life. I know that's not a pleasant message. I know it's not a positive message. But I believe that someone has to tell the truth. We don't have a real leader or real parties running in this election. They're all bad. And it's the truth. The answer for Israel is that Israel, by the way, will be saved by God. God will make sure that Israel is saved in the end. So despite all the bad news out of Israel, in the end, Israel will be saved and the good guys will win in Israel in the end. In Israel, that will happen. In America, there's no guarantee of that. And in other nations, there's no guarantee of that. But the Bible makes clear that Israel and the Jewish people will be saved, and in the end, the good guys will win in the battle for Israel and the Jewish people. Now, in Israel, for instance, we've already told you about this political party, Otzma Yisrael, that is smearing me personally and that's running a campaign against us because they, I don't know, I supported these people. I supported Baruch Marzel and Ben-Ari, Michael Ben-Ari, and these other people that are in that party. I supported them in the past because I thought that they were Kahanists. But they, despite my support and despite my loyal support for them, they continue to fear me as though I'm some sort of competitor and fear my coming to Israel and taking over the movement and pushing them to the side. That's what they're afraid of, which I had no intention of doing. I did intend to go to Israel, but I was going to help them if I went to Israel. I'm a very loyal person. I wouldn't have pushed anybody to the side if they were doing good work. But they feared me, and so for years now, they've been smearing me. We've already spoken about that, and you know we're responding to them. We're telling the truth, and we become an issue in the campaign because of that. In their campaign, we become an issue. But I want to speak about, since we've already addressed that issue, because they're a small party that maybe will get 2 or 3 seats in the Knesset, maybe. They may get no seats in the Knesset. God willing, I hope they don't. They don't deserve to get any seats in the Knesset with the way they've been behaving. And they betrayed all the principles, and they don't deserve to. But if they succeed, maybe they'll get 2 or 3 seats. If not, they'll get 0 seats. So they're not really a huge factor in terms of Israeli policy. They don't influence Israeli policy. So let's speak about the other bigger parties. We have a party headed by Naftali Bennett called Habayit HaYehudi in Hebrew, which means the Jewish home. And this is the old Maftal. The Maftal is the National Religious Party. This is the party that supported Theodore Herzl's proposal to give up the entire land of Israel, forget about the dream of returning to Israel, and create a Jewish state in Uganda, in the middle of Africa. This is a so-called religious party, and they were willing to create the Jewish state in Uganda and forget about Eretz Yisrael, forget about the land of Israel. They supported Herzl's proposal. That was over 100 years ago, but since then they haven't changed. They supported the retreat from the Sinai, which was the most disastrous retreat in Israel's history. They are part of the Yesha Council, and Naftali Bennett, who is the new head of this party, was the leader of the Yesha Council, an organization that has betrayed the Jewish people again and again. An organization whose leaders recently announced they're actually supporting the Likud and Bibi Netanyahu, who has frozen all Jewish building in Judea and Samaria, and they're supporting him for re-election. They're supporting him to become prime minister again and supporting his party. So, I mean, it just shows, I mean, what a group of sellouts, establishment lackeys, and cheap politicians. It just doesn't get worse than this. And this guy, Naftali Bennett, is being presented as the new right winger. This is a guy who said in an interview on a program called Mishal Cham on Channel 2, which is a big program they have on Channel 2 in Israel, on Israeli television. He said that he could not, as a matter of conscience, obey orders to expel Jews. He knew exactly what he was doing when he said that. And let's make it clear, a lot of Israelis agree that you should not obey orders to do that. According to one leftist poll, 29% of Israeli Jews said that they agree with that, they agree with his statement, you should not obey orders to expel Jews. So he knows there's a huge chunk of the electorate out there that believes in what he said, that believes you should not obey orders to do that. 29%, according to a leftist poll, said that they agree that you should not obey orders to expel Jews from their homeland. That soldiers and police should and Mishmar HaGvul, which is the border guard, that they should disobey orders to do that. And when he said that, his poll numbers went way up, in fact. He got a lot more support for his party. His party went from 10 or 11 seats that they're projected to get out of 120 seats in the Knesset, they're projected to get 10 or 11 seats in the election. All of a sudden, his poll numbers went up like to 15 seats, according to the polls. So he gained even though everybody attacked him. What is this? You're supporting sarvanut, you're supporting refusal to obey orders. This will break down Israeli society. You can't have this. This is going to lead to chaos. But huge numbers of Israelis agreed with him and thought he was courageous and thought that he was taking a courageous stand. Of course, we knew better because we know Naftali Bennett. We know them. We know what Habayit HaYehudi, we know what this party is all about. Surely enough, he backed down the next day. And he's reversed himself completely, and now he said that he would expel the Jews. He said that, you know, he completely reversed himself and went in the other direction. That is the Yesha Council, that's Hamaftal, that is Habayit HaYehudi, the Jewish home, this party of Naftali Bennett. They bluff and they claim to represent Jewish interests, and they claim to represent the Jews in Judea and Samaria, and in the end they stab them in the back and they go along with the establishment. That is the worst thing we can have. If they are the leaders of the so-called opposition, we lose every time. That's what happened in Gush Katif. That's what happened everywhere. So he is a disaster. He's a fraud. He's a bluff. And his party is a disastrous party. And so we don't like any of the leaders running. We don't like any of the parties running. So people might ask, what's the solution? I have news for you. Since 1948, 64 years ago, when the redemption began, 64 years ago, the redemption of the world began. Harambam, Maimonides, says, what is the redemption? When there's a Jewish state and Jewish sovereignty. 64 years ago it started, when the state of Israel came into being again. God miraculously created the state of Israel. The redemption started. Hageulah. This started, the redemption. Since this started, we have not had one political party or one politician worth supporting. Other than Rabbi Meir Kahana, Zecher Tzaddik V'Kadosh Livracha, Hashem Yikom Damo, may the memory of this saint be immortalized and may God avenge his blood. Other than Rabbi Kahana and his Kach party, we have not had one party or one political leader worth supporting. Not one. And yet Israel has survived, and yet we had the miraculous 1948 War of Independence and the miraculous 1967 Six Day War, despite the fact that the leaders and the politicians all stink. So, you know, it doesn't mean it's all over. It's bad that we don't have good leaders. It's bad that we don't have somebody to vote for in the election. Yeah, it's bad. But it's not the end of the world, and it doesn't mean that our struggle is over. We've got to wake the people of Israel up, and we've got to create our own party. Eventually, we've got to build a movement so that we could create our own party to run. That will be a good party. That will be an actual continuation of what Rabbi Kahana started. That's what we need to do. We must wake the people of Israel up. We must tell the people of Israel why the creation of a Palestine state is national suicide. The latest poll shows most Israelis are willing to accept the creation of a Palestine state. They've been brainwashed into thinking we have no choice. They don't want it, but they've been brainwashed into thinking, well, there's nothing we can do about it. We have no choice. God forbid that we accept that. God forbid that we accept going back to the pre-1967 suicide borders, which is what the poll shows most Israelis now are willing, very reluctantly, very grudgingly, to accept, because they've been brainwashed into believing we there's nothing else we could do. And that's just not true. If we don't wake the people of Israel up, and if Israel does do this and creates a so-called Palestine state, we're talking about a horrific nightmare and catastrophe for the Jewish people. Horrific, beyond all words. And so our job is to wake the people of Israel up, to build opposition to this, to fight against this, to say, you must disobey orders to expel Jews. You must refuse to expel your fellow Jews. If you're a soldier and you see that happening, you should put down your weapon and get on this and go and get on the side of the people who are being expelled. And you should join the resistance against those being expelled. Instead of expelling them, you should be among the people fighting the expulsion. We need to wake the people of Israel up. There is no alternative. And we are the one group that does that. You know, people attack us in Israel. They say we're too extreme, we're too pure, we're purists, we're extremists, we're too idealistic, which is what they said to Rabbi Kahana, which is what they said to King David and Moses and Abraham and Isaac and Jacob and all the Jews in history and Mordechai and all the Jews in history that stood for the truth. They always say that. People who are moral, people who take a stand, People who are willing to sail against the wind and swim against the tide. People who want to be popular, but are not willing to sell out their principles for the sake of popularity, because we want to be popular. We want everybody to love us. I want to be the most popular person in the world. But I won't do it at the expense of my fellow Jews and at the expense of the truth. That I will not do. If I have to be hated, I'll be hated. But I'm going to tell the truth, because I love my people, the Jewish people. And I love the land of Israel. And I love the God of Israel, and I love the Torah of Israel. And I am not going to sell out for popularity, or for a Knesset seat, or for money from the Israeli government, or the other things that people get. I'm not going to do that. I will not do that. And we won't do that, and people in Israel know that we're the one group that doesn't do that. And so we got to wake people up. We got to show them the idealists are right. We got to show them that the true way is the way of idealism. That though the idealistic leaders, they're the ones that saved the Jewish people over and over again in history. That's our mission. It's a very tough mission. It's an uphill battle. Someday we're going to win. I don't know if it'll be in my lifetime. I'm 56 years old. But someday people like us will be in power in Israel. There's no doubt about that. The Bible, the Torah, God promise us. That the people of Israel will wake up, and that there will be righteousness, and that the Mashiach, the Messiah, will come. I mean, good things will the good will win out in the end. That will happen. When it will happen, I have no idea. It may not happen in our lifetimes. God forbid, but it may not. And there may be terrible tragedy before then, God forbid. I don't know. But we must continue to stand for the truth. We hope that we're actually able to go all the way and save the Jewish people and bring redemption. We hope. We don't know. But we've got to keep fighting. And we've got to tell the truth. And we've got to wake the people of Israel up. And if you agree that there has to be one group that doesn't compromise, one group that tells the truth, one group that tells the people of Israel, we must resist, we must fight retreat, we must fight expulsion of Jews, we must fight surrender, we must say no to a so-called Palestine state, we must say that the land of Israel belongs to the Jewish people and that it's a crime and a sin to give up even 1 inch of our sacred land to the Arab Muslim Nazi enemy. If you agree that it's essential that there be a group that does that, then this is your group, JTF, because that's what we do. I can't promise you that we're going to win and succeed with this generation. I can't promise you that, but I can promise you we're going to do everything we can to wake the Jewish people up and to stand for the truth. And I know that you know that that's important. You know that there's an obligation on that we have an obligation to do everything we can. What God will do in the end, that's up to God. But at least there'll be someone who will have been there, who will have told the truth, who will have tried. And maybe that will give God the excuse he looks for to have mercy on his people. Anyway, I want to thank the great JTFers who have been helping us and who understand the importance of what we're doing. Because really, we are alone in terms of the uncompromising truth that we preach. We are alone. I'm sorry. I don't want us to be alone. I want there to be a million groups that speak like us. I want lots of groups out there saying this. I wish the whole Jewish people thought like this. But they don't. What can we do? And so, I want to thank the great JTFers who understand the vital importance of what we're doing, how vitally important it is to reach as many Jews as possible with our message, how vitally important it is. Those great JTFers who go to the JTF.org English main page and click on the donate button on top and contribute to us with their credit card, it takes only a few minutes. God bless you. And the great JTFers who do the same thing on the Hebrew main page, hayamin.org. We have a donate button there too. God bless you. And the great JTFers who send us checks and money orders and cash donations every week. You're helping us reach people in Israel with the truth. You're helping us stand up for the truth when no one else will. That is the most important thing we could do in this generation. That's the most important thing we can do in our lives now. God bless you. God bless your loved ones in this world and in the next. And may Hashem have mercy on the Jewish people and on the righteous Gentiles. May Hashem have mercy on us all. Okay, and now we go to our great questions from our great JTFers, and we start out with the great LKZ, who writes, and I quote, "Consider backstabbed Rivka Barry. Everywhere things fit to take over the world. Christians say the devil will. Is there a conspiracy and will it work?" Unquote. Okay, great question, LKZ. There is a conspiracy. It's not the conspiracy that conspiracy nuts who the 9/11 truthers and these other kooks. It's not the conspiracy that they promote. That's nonsense. And by the way, when they promote that, that discredits the real conspiracy. The real conspiracy. I'll tell you what the real conspiracy is. 1.5 billion people believe in a religion called Islam that preaches world domination and that preaches jihad in the Quran and in the Hadith. That's a fact. That's something anyone can check. You could just look at the Quran and see what it says. And they're buying up all the big corporations. They're buying up the news media. And there are people who collaborate with them and support them. That really, truly is happening. And they are pressuring Israel to commit national suicide and intend to pressure Israel to commit national suicide. That really and truly is happening. And in the United States and in European countries and the West, they're pressuring those countries to open their borders and to allow third world people to march in and take over the Western countries so it'll be the end of the Western world. That really is happening. And I'm not even going into the reasons. There are many reasons for it. Some of it is because businesses want cheap labor, and so they want the cheap third world labor to come in, and they don't care about the future of America or of European countries. Some of it, I mean, they have all types of reasons for this. I mean, there are all types of reasons. Whatever the reasons are, the end result will be destruction. And those people are working toward achieving that for their own selfish reasons, for their own selfish goals. They don't do it because they want to destroy the world. They don't think they're destroying the world, but they are. We know they are. The conspiracy to destroy nations in the world has worked throughout history and will work again. Israel will not be destroyed. Israel will not be destroyed because God, this return to Israel is the final one and God will protect Israel. But there could be terrible death and suffering there. Western countries? Who knows? The key is that people have to wake up and stand for the truth and fight for the truth. And there has to be a movement that stands up and fights for the truth through the political process. We've got to build a movement that can participate in the political process and stand up for the truth. That's our task. That's how we can avoid suffering and tragedy in the world and avoid terrible consequences. Anyway, thank you very much, LKZ. And now we go to the great Yimach Shemoto Obama, who writes, and I quote, "Dear Chaim, is Canada heading down the same path as America is?" Unquote. Unfortunately, of course it is. Of course it is. Canada is allowing huge numbers of third world people to come into Canada and immigrate to Canada. I understand that it's a huge country. Canada is larger than the United States, even including Alaska and Hawaii. Canada is actually bigger in area, in territory, than the United States of America. It's a huge country. And yet, they have a population which is relatively small. I don't remember exactly. It's 30 million plus. I don't remember exactly what the population of Canada is. But they've always had a policy of trying to encourage people to move there, because they have a huge territory and they want more people to live there. But the people they're encouraging to move there are people who destroy countries and societies. And you see the same pattern of decadence and depravity in Canada that you see taking place in America and in other countries. So of course that's true. Yes, Canada or the Canadian people also had better wake up before they lose their country as well. Thank you so much, Yimach Shemoto Obama. And now we go to the great Tag Mechir Tzedek, who writes, and I quote, "Who is Pesach Ben Dov?" Great question, Tag Mechir. Pesach Ben Dov, Alav HaShalom, may he rest in peace, Zichrono Livracha, may his memory be immortalized, is my father. Pesach Ben Dov is my father. My name is Chaim ben Pesach, and Pesach ben Dov is my father. Obviously, Dov was my grandfather, Alav HaShalom, Zichrono Livracha. And now, Tag Mechir Tzedek writes, "Should the Rabbanut," which means the rabbis or the rabbinical institution, the rabbis, "should the Rabbanut be boycotted, supported, or something in between?" Unquote. When you say the Rabbanut, we can't boycott all rabbis. We need rabbis to guide us on halachic issues. But there is a time when there are times when the majority of rabbis take stands for all types of reasons that we just can't follow. The majority, not all. You never have a situation where all are taking the wrong stand. We've never had. And so when that happens, we've got to do the logical, sane thing. I mean, the majority of rabbis said that it was ridiculous to make Aliyah to the land of Israel before the Holocaust. The majority of rabbis told us we're not going to have an independent Jewish state. The majority of rabbis were against the Jewish revolt of the Irgun and the Stern group that led to the creation of the Jewish state. The majority of rabbis were against what we and the JDL did to liberate over 1 million Soviet Jews. So rabbis are human beings, and rabbis can make wrong decisions. Not all rabbis. But we've got to find the ones who take stands that we see are consistent with logical reading of history and of what's going on in the world, and support those and follow those. But we have to have rabbinical guidance on halachic issues. That we have to have. Anyway, thank you very much, Tag Mechir Tzedek. And now we go to the great Yimach Shmo de Feminazi Filth, who writes, and I quote, Shalom Chaim, please say a beautiful prayer for Feminazis and the amoral idiots who support them to die horrific deaths from cancer. Thanks very much. Thank you. Thank you much. Or thanks. Thanks. Thank you much. Yes. Unquote. Well, Yimach Shmo, obviously I am completely opposed to feminism. I support women's rights. I support the rights of women, and I support true equality for women, which doesn't mean that men and women are the same. Men and women have different roles in society and are different, but I do believe in women's rights 100%. We love and respect women. And women have, of course, women have the right to equality. But there are sometimes different roles for women. And feminazis basically are anti-male. They try to create hatred between men and women. And they try to divide and conquer between men and women. And they've done some terrible, terrible things and have created terrible problems in society because of that. And so feminism is an extremely, extremely negative force that has led to terrible consequences for society and most of all, bad consequences for women. The number one victims of feminism are women. Because women have been told, you're not a real woman if you stay in the home and raise your children. You're not a real woman if you're loyal to your husband. You're not a real woman if you get married and have a decent family. This is what the feminazis have been saying, and they are feminazis. And they're completely intolerant of anyone who does not share their twisted, sick, hateful view of life. Their bitter, twisted, sick, hateful view of life. So, of course, it's a very, very negative, despicable movement. And again, we support women's rights. And because we love women and support women's rights, we are vigorously opposed to the feminazis who have created such a catastrophe for women. Anyway, thank you, Yimach Shmo de Feminazi Filth. And now we go to the great Kahana loyalist who writes, and I quote, Chaim, there is an effort to write Rabbi Kahana out of the struggle for Soviet Jewry. Do you think JTF should create a documentary telling the truth? Unquote. Of course it would be great. I mean, that would be a very worthwhile project. But we have so many things, Kahana loyalist, that we have to do, though. And, you know, we're so torn between so many different things, it's difficult for us to find the time. A documentary is very time-consuming. Should someone do it? Of course someone should do that. Of course someone should do it. I don't know if JTF would have the time to do it, but it certainly would be worthwhile. There's no question that without Rabbi Kahana, and without the JDL, and without what we did to save Soviet Jews would never have gotten out. It would have been the end of another Jewish community, a huge Jewish community. They would have been assimilated and smothered in assimilationism and intermarriage, and that would have been the end of that community. There's no question about that. No one spoke about Soviet Jewry and the struggle for Soviet Jewry until JDL started. its campaign. No one. And then people abandoned Soviet Jewry when JDL died out in the 70s and the early 80s. JDL died out, and Soviet Jews weren't getting out again. I mean, you can see the correlation between JDL and when Soviet Jews were getting out, between JDL being active and when Soviet Jews were getting out. There was a clear correlation there. There's no doubt that it was the JDL that freed the Soviet Jews. And even when the Soviet Union fell, the same Russian communist bureaucrats were still in charge and would not have issued visas to the Jews to leave, because the Jews still needed visas to leave the country. They still needed to leave the country even after the Soviet Union fell and you just had Russia and the various republics. You couldn't just walk out and leave. And so, you know, to get permission to leave, they weren't going to get that permission. Had the JDL not created a situation where the Soviet officials and then the officials in the former Soviet Union realized that this was going to severely damage their relations with the United States and the West. It was the JDL that did all of that. All the other Jewish groups were against any protests or any effort on behalf of Soviet Jewry until JDL started its campaign. That's a fact. Should there be a documentary saying that? Of course there should be. If somebody wishes to do it, it would be a very worthwhile project. Anyway, thank you very much, Kahana Loyalist. And now we go to Binyamin Yisrael, who always has interesting points to make. Binyamin Yisrael writes, and I quote, "Can you expose U.S. Congressman from Philadelphia, Chaka Fata? Is he a black Muslim?" Unquote. Well, he uses the name Fatah, which is the Arabic, of course, which is the organization. Fatah is the Muslim terrorist mass murder organization of Yasser Arafat, yamach shmo. And Fatah means conquest in Arabic. That's the name he uses. And yet he claims to be a Baptist. You know, look, we know from Jeremiah Wright and Jesse Jackson and Al Sharpton, we know that these creatures who pretend sometimes to be Baptists and Christians, we know that they're not, they're Christian. Like, if they're Christians, I'm an Ayatollah. I mean, you know, I don't know what he defines himself as. I don't know if he's a Muslim wannabe. I don't know what he defines himself as, but he's definitely a racist and an anti-Semite. He's a hater of whites and a hater of Jews. That's for sure. As is the entire Congressional Black Caucus. All of them. Anyway, thank you very much, Binyamin Yisrael. And now we go to the great Say No to Islam, who writes, and I quote, "What are your thoughts on Terry Gilliam, far-left anti-American director, a native of Minnesota, but renounced citizenship protesting Bush policies," unquote. Well, it's a shame he's still admitted into the country. He's another sick example of the type of sick people that we have. You know, you have so many sick people in this world. I mean, this is what he's worried about. You know, he actually renounces his American citizenship. He thinks other countries in the world are better than the United States, are preferable to the United States. He hates America, so he's born and raised in America and reached such success and was given such success in America, and this is the way he behaves. I mean, he's a grotesque person. By the way, when he did this, though, he said at the time, if you recall, that one of the reasons he was doing it is for tax purposes. So I have a funny feeling that it wasn't just a matter of ideology and principles here. This is a guy who wanted to avoid paying American taxes. And he himself admitted that that was a factor. Anyway, thank you very much, Say No to Islam. And now we go to the great Dan Ben Noach, our great forum administrator, who writes, and I quote, "Shalom Chaim, what is the likelihood of the newly elected Israeli government striking Iran? And if there's a strike, what will Russia and China do?" Unquote. Excellent question. Unfortunately, I don't see the Israeli government doing that right now. I hope that events are created where either Israel or the United States are forced to do it. I hope, God willing. But right now, I don't see that happening, which is one of the reasons why we have to keep speaking out and trying our best, again, to awaken people, to pressure leaders and to pressure the politicians, because this is a matter of survival. But right now, I don't see that happening. I don't think that Netanyahu has the guts to do it. As far as Russia and China, they'll do nothing. Russia and China are not going to intervene militarily to defend Iran. They would do nothing. And so this is definitely doable. It's militarily, it is still doable. And of course, the strike has to be a decisive, powerful strike on all of the on all of the laboratories, on the laboratories, on the factories, on the facilities that we're aware of. All of them have to be struck. And not just bombing them from the air, because some of them are underground, so you may have to send soldiers, you may have to drop soldiers with explosives and have them enter into the underground facilities. They may have to penetrate the underground facilities and place explosives there to blow up the underground facilities. You may have to do that. I don't know what would be involved, but it may be a complicated military operation, but it's doable. It is certainly doable. And obviously, it's vital that it be done. And we're going to continue pushing as hard as we can and speaking out as much as we can to get the Israeli government to do this, because it's a matter of survival. I mean, this is one of the reasons why Michael Ben-Ari and this party, Otzma Yisrael, are such a disaster. I mean, this guy, he calls himself a Kahanist, and he said the stupidest thing Israel could do would be to strike Iran? I mean, that's insane. The stupidest, most insane thing Israel could do is not strike Iran. I mean, just insanity. You remember we put this interview he did in Hebrew, we put it up, and we did a video on it. I mean, just unbelievable. I mean, it's just the ultimate example of how he is preaching the opposite of what a Kahanist should be preaching. Kahanist has to be warning Jews and waking Jews up and trying to save Jews when there's a danger. That's what Rabbi Kahana always did in his lifetime. Well, at least we're doing that. And we're going to continue to do that. And God willing, may there be a miracle and may God push the United States or Israel into striking Iran. Or may there be something that pushes them into doing this somehow. Anyway, thank you very much, Dan Ben-Noach. And now we go to the great Dr. Dan, the voice of reason, common sense, and logic, who writes, and I quote, "Your opinion on the following, Israel should do to their enemies what Assad has done to his people," unquote. Well, obviously, I think I do believe that. Yes, I certainly do think so. I think Israel should destroy the terrorists in Judea, Samaria, and Gaza. All of the structure of the terrorists, absolutely destroy them. The Air Force should be sent in, and Israel should destroy them. Israel could do it much more effectively than the Syrian Air Force and the Syrian Army, because the Israeli Air Force and the Israeli Army are much more effective. But that is what should be done to Israel's enemies, absolutely. Except that Israel could do it much more effectively than Assad has done it, has been able to do. You know, if they ever had the power, if our enemies ever had the power, they would murder every last one of us. Every Jew, every righteous Gentile, every non-Muslim infidel. If they had the ability to, they would slaughter every last one of us. So we're sitting back here and allowing them to grow and grow and become a greater and greater danger. I mean, just, it's insanity. It's insanity. And that's why we need a government and leadership in Israel that will turn that around. Anyway, thank you very much, Dr. Dan, for the great question. And now we go to Asher Hillel, who is new to our forum, I see. Asher Hillel, Baruch Haba, welcome to our forum. It's great to have you with us. Asher Hillel writes, and I quote, "Dear Chaim, you speak a beautiful Haskalic Hebrew just like my father and grandfather did. How did you develop such a beautiful Ivrit?" Unquote. Well, when I was very young, Rabbi Kahana said to me, "Chaim, you have to learn how to speak Hebrew. We must learn how to speak Hebrew." I didn't speak Hebrew, but Rabbi Kahana said, "We have to learn how to speak Hebrew. Jews must speak Hebrew." And when my rabbi said something, I would do it. And so I decided to learn, and I learned by myself. I learned from books, and I learned by myself. I taught myself, and it was very hard. There was no internet in those days. And there was no, for a Jew in those days in America to learn Hebrew. Nobody spoke Hebrew in those days in the United States. I had to learn all by myself from books. It was really, really hard. But Baruch Hashem, where there's a will, there's a way. And I urge, by the way, our Jewish members to learn Hebrew. If non-Jews want to learn, of course, they're welcome to do so, but they're not required to do so. But my fellow Jews, I certainly urge my fellow Jews to learn Hebrew. Very, very important. Anyway, thank you very much, Asher. And now we go to the great British sword, who writes, and I quote, "Hi, Chaim. My plan now is to make you Prime Minister of Israel so your country can lead by example. I think America is screwed. Sorry." Unquote. British sword, the politicians in Israel better be worried, because when British sword decides to do something, people better pay attention, because we know that British sword is very, very skilled. So I'm glad you're on our team, British sword. I'm glad you're on our team. You're of course a great person, and it's such a privilege and an honor to work with you. Anyway, thank you so much, British sword. Thank you, and God bless you. And now we go to Mr. VSS, who writes, and I quote, "Shalom Chaim, please give us your insight into the Warsaw Ghetto uprising," unquote. Okay, that's a very good question, or a very good subject to raise. First of all, there were a lot of tragedies in the Warsaw Ghetto uprising. The German Nazis, Yimach Shmam V'Zichram, began pushing all the Jews into very crowded ghettos. That was their policy. And the Jews in the Warsaw Ghetto and in the other ghettos refused to believe that the Germans were actually exterminating the Jews. They actually believed the German Nazi propaganda that the Jews are just going to labor camps. So they didn't resist. And they went along and they cooperated with the German Nazis because they really thought that they're just going to go to labor camps. Thousands of Jews were dying, of course, of famine and of disease in these crowded ghettos where the conditions were absolutely inhuman beyond words. But until late 1942 or early 1943, when it was already too late, the Jews in the Warsaw Ghetto refused to believe that they were being led to extermination. There were about 300,000 Jews initially in the Warsaw Ghetto, and the number kept going down because people were dying of starvation and disease. And there were much fewer by the time the revolt took place in early 1943. In 1943, the Jews hardly had food to eat. They were starving. They were unarmed. And they built arms themselves out of nothing. They literally out of nothing. Whatever they had in the ghetto, they put together arms and built arms themselves and decided to resist. And by the way, leftist Jews refused to fight with rightist Jews, and they were fighting each other and refusing to cooperate, even as the Germans surrounded them and started exterminating all of them. They still would not fight together against the German Nazis. I mean, it was really an example of the insanity that exists. It was the leftist Jews, of course, that wouldn't fight with the right-wing Jews. The right-wing Jews wanted everybody to fight together. But they did some interesting things in the Warsaw Ghetto uprising. Number one, they executed Jewish Nazi collaborators. The Jewish Nazi collaborators and the Judenrat, the Kapos, they executed them. And that was something that we should always remember, that Jewish traitors and enemies of the Jewish people, we should not have mercy on Jewish traitors and enemies of the Jewish people. And then from January to April 1943, they led a revolt. They led a guerrilla revolt against the German Nazis, and were killing German Nazi soldiers, and the German Nazis were trying to kill them. And this went on for several months. And then the big resistance came. The Nazis decided they're going to go in there and they're really going to wipe everybody out. They decided in April. So from April to May 1943, the Germans went in and decided they're really going to wipe everybody out and really concentrated huge resources and a huge portion of their army to defeat the Jews who were there. And the Jews, again, were starving, were unarmed, and they held out longer than the nation of France against Germany. France, which had a bigger standing army than Nazi Germany, surrendered more quickly than the Jews, than the unarmed, starving thousands of Jews that were left in the Warsaw Ghetto. That's how brave the Jews were in the Warsaw Ghetto. They held out longer than the whole nation of Poland. They held out longer than most nations in Europe were able to hold out against the German Nazis. The bravery and the valor and the ingenuity of these Jewish fighters in the Warsaw Ghetto proved that if the Jews decide to resist and fight back, they can be a pretty fierce people and a very courageous people. If they get over the ghetto mentality and 2,000 years of living in the Galut, they can be a very brave people. And that's what the Warsaw Ghetto uprising proved. And of course, later on, we saw that with the revolt against the British Empire from the Irgun and the Stern Group in the land of Israel, and then the successful revolt, 100,000 British soldiers were driven out of the land of Israel by only 1,000 Jewish underground fighters. I mean, it was incredible. And we saw then, of course, in the wars how Israel, against all odds, but really David versus Goliath and then some, how Israel amazingly won incredible victories. So we've seen that the people that supposedly can't fight and can't do anything became the world's greatest fighters and the bravest fighters. A fulfillment of biblical prophecy. Fulfillment of biblical prophecy that was a precursor to the Jews returning to their homeland. Further proof of the fact that every word in the Torah and the Bible is true, and every word in the Torah and the Bible that has not yet been fulfilled, all the prophecies that haven't yet been fulfilled, will yet be fulfilled. Anyway, thank you, Mr. VSS. And now we go to the great EB22, who writes, and I quote, "Why do you think that most Muslims reacted mildly or not at all when BHO came out in support of same-sex marriage earlier this year?" Unquote. Okay, that's a great question. BHO being Barack Hussein Obama. Muslims didn't react because Muslims, EB, want America to be destroyed. They want America to go down. They don't care if America, the infidel nation, becomes decadent and depraved. They want America to be decadent and depraved so that they could destroy America. They want America destroyed. That's why they didn't come out against it. I mean, people who really care about America came out strongly against it. That's why we in JTF condemned it and did everything we could to defeat Obama and to respond to Obama. But people who don't care and who want America to be destroyed, like the Muslims, of course they're not going to react to this. Of course not. Also, you have to remember that their priority, the priority of the Muslims, is jihad. They're not worried about these other issues. You don't see Muslims running around in the pro-life movement or the movement to preserve traditional marriage. You don't see Muslims active in those movements. They wouldn't be. They are the only thing, the way Orthodox Jews, for instance, Orthodox Jews are very much pro-life and very much involved in trying to preserve traditional marriage. The Muslims are not. The thing the Muslims focus on is destruction. Jihad, which means holy war and destruction. That's what they're focused on. And if America does things that weaken America and that bring America down, the Muslims are happy about that. Anyway, thank you, EB. And now we go to the fantastic Tzelhar, who writes, and I quote, "Shalom Chaim, did you encounter 5%ers in your prison time?" Unquote. Okay, that's a great question. By the way, Tzelhar, you know, I apologize to you on the Hebrew forum. You wrote your question for the Ask JTF in Hebrew. You got the question in, unfortunately, your question was written after I had already taped the Hebrew Ask JTF program. So I apologize that I didn't answer your question on the Hebrew forum. But anyway, once again, Selha writes, asks if I encountered 5%ers in my prison time. Yes, I certainly did. Quite a few. The 5%ers are, it's one of these sects of the black Muslims that broke off from the main black Muslim sect. The main black Muslim sect under Wallace Farad Muhammad claimed that Wallace Farad Muhammad, the son of Elijah Muhammad, was really God. They claim he's God, that he's God incarnate. And the 5%ers claim, no, that their founder, I forgot his name, but their founder is really God. They claim that the head of their cult is actually God. He's dead, of course, now, burning in hell, of course. But at the time, in the 1960s, this is what they claimed. And they're still a pretty big sect. And especially in the prison system. They recruit in the prison system. And the stupidity, the insanity, the ignorance of what these people represent, I can't even begin to describe what the insanity is. I don't even remember. The word Allah means, I forgot what it means. The word Allah, they say, is initials for all types of words in English. I mean, just insanity. I mean, just completely crazy. Real. I mean, anyone who's familiar with the subculture of black racists knows how primitive and how stupid and how crazy they are. It's like Farrakhan saying that there's a a spaceship flying over the Earth called the Mothership, and that it's going to suck up the whole white race when Allah gives the signal, and that Elijah Muhammad is the captain of the spaceship. I mean, this is what they teach. I mean, just unbelievable, childish, primitive insanity. It's demented. It's primitive. It's something that can only come out of the mind of someone who has an IQ of 50 or less. I mean, just unbelievably laughable. And the 5%ers are part of that. They're just completely cuckoo, completely crazy. And I met them in the prison system, and you know, they're supposed to be the religious Muslims, and they were all secretly using yeast to make alcohol in the kitchen and get drunk. You're not allowed to drink if you're a Muslim. I mean, just the whole everything, just a farce. Just a farce. Everything they stand for is just a farce. Anyway, thank you, Tzelhar. Great question. And now we go to the great Maimonides, who writes, and I quote, Shalom Chaim, what are your thoughts on the gun ownership laws in Israel, unquote. Well, Maimonides, I think you know that I'm against anti-gun laws. I think that law-abiding Jewish citizens of Israel have a right to be armed and have a right to protect themselves, their families, their homes, and their businesses. I'm against anti-gun laws. Every law-abiding citizen in Israel and in the United States should have the right to be armed. And so I'm against anti-gun laws in Israel. Anyway, thank you, Maimonides. And now we go to Ephraim ben Noach, another fantastic JTFer. Ephraim ben Noach writes, and I quote, Shalom Chaim, with all of these infiltrators in American and Israeli government, how are we ever going to straighten things out, unquote. Ephraim, we've had this problem for thousands of years. King David also had infiltrators in his government, but look what a great government he created and all the great things he accomplished. Yes, we have evil people. You always have evil people and bad people, and you have problems in the world. That's something we live with until the Messiah comes and straightens everything out. The Messiah will straighten everything out, and then we're going to have a perfect world. But until then, we've got evil people, and we've got a lot of things that have to be straightened out, and we're always going to have to confront evil and immorality and indecency and injustice. That's our task, but it's not hopeless by any means. In the end, Ephraim, the good guys are going to win. Always, Ephraim, look at the prophet as Isaiah or Jeremiah, or read what the prophets say. They write about how terrible things are coming and all types of terrible calamities are coming. And then in the end, they always end off by writing, but then God will come over and bring back Israel and do all these wonderful things. And, you know, always ends off good. In the Bible, every time there are warnings like this about future disasters and catastrophes, which may occur, God forbid, but every time there's a warning about it, there's always a happy ending. Because God does love us. And the real ruler of the universe is all good. And so good will prevail in the end. The good guys are going to win. And we should never, never be discouraged by the fact that most people are against us, or it seems like things are... Yes, it's difficult. It's very tough. And it's frustrating sometimes. But let's remember, God is the ruler of the universe. God is stronger than everyone, than all of us. And God loves the righteous. And so the righteous will have a good destiny in the end. Thank you, Ephraim. And I want to thank all of our great JTFers for another program. Until next week, Shalom.